Before audio playlists, before CDs or cassette tapes, even before vinyl, there were wax cylinders. By the late 1890s, sliding a wax cylinder onto a Thomas Edison phonograph was the way that people listened to commercial music. It was also a way they could record themselves.
Today's June the 21st, a day before Boy's birthday.
Thousands of these live in public collections. NPR's Jennifer Vanasco was in Manhattan when a machine arrived to play recordings that may not have been heard in a century.
Deep in the basement of the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts, there's a new machine about the size of a small suitcase. It has two screens, an intimidating number of buttons and dials, a laser, and an arm holding a stylus, like the kind of needle that plays records on a turntable. It's called the Endpoint Cylinder and Dictabelt Machine. And we're going to hear audio that no one else has heard, likely since around the turn of the last century. And a lot of times, no one even knows what's on these cylinders. They're blank.
No label space to write a nice label. So you get a priceless thing next to something that's just a common cylinder.
That's Nick Berg, the inventor of the Endpoint.
There's a laser in back of here, and it's looking...
He flew here from Burbank, California with his machine and a trunk full of tools. And now he's setting it up. One of the first recordings he's going to try to digitize was found by curator Jessica Wood in 2016.
The music division did not keep very careful acquisitions records back in the 1930s. I just know that the big wooden box that I found on the inside of the lid, it said Gift of Mary Dana to the New York Public Library in 1935.
She's hoping we'll hear a birthday party or something that tells us more about the social history of the time. Even someone shouting their name and explaining they're testing the machine, which is a pretty common thing to hear on these recordings. Because the important thing about wax cylinders is not just that they played the earliest recordings of commercial music and comedy sketches. It's that for the first time, people were able to record themselves. And many did. Or they were recorded by other people, like ethnographers. Nick Berg.
Native American recordings are very rewarding to work on because a lot of times those communities are relearning their language and such and their other stories. And so some of the projects I work on, they're now cutting those up into words, into phrases to use in the classrooms. They're on the reservations and such.
There are about 2,700 cylinders in the collection of the New York Public Library. 90 are mysteries. The Endpoint not only produces clearer recordings than earlier machines, with the laser, it can read cylinders that are cracked or broken. Curator Wood takes a box wrapped in brown paper out of a large red cooler, like you'd have at a picnic.
We usually put it in a cooler because the temperature fluctuation is high enough that it could sort of upset the cylinder, could cause it to crack.
Holding, you have to be careful just because of the heat of your hands. You have to kind of rotate. You don't want to hold it for too long or it could crack just by holding it.
It's a light putty brown color, which means it's an early recording. Black wax cylinders came later. It's also fairly smooth, the grooves are barely visible, and the cylinder itself is thin. Berg says these are signs that it's a home recording, but also that the levels are very low and maybe hard to hear.
These are all acoustically recorded, so they had to, yell into a horn, essentially. So often, if they're a distance away from the horn, it's a very low recording level.
Most of the people doing these recordings were hobbyists who were experimenting. One of the most famous is Lionel Mapleson. He recorded his family.
Yeah, good morning, not here, let's go school. We come up at school.
But he was also the librarian for the Metropolitan Opera. And in the early 1900s, he recorded dozens of rehearsals and performances. Listening to his work is the only way you can hear pre-World War I opera singers with a full orchestra.
They represent the first extensive live recordings in recorded history.
Bob Kozofsky is a librarian in the Music and Recorded Sound Division. He says Mapleson was a pioneer.
And then he started capturing sounds from the Met stage from various places, first from the prompter's box, and then he went to the fly system, and he got really good results, and he became a kind of fanatic and kept on doing it and doing it.
The library knew right away how important these recordings were. Over the years, librarians tried to transfer them to other media several times. They sent them out to the Library of Congress, to Germany. What they got back were sometimes damaged cylinders and recordings that were hard to hear.
Some of them do sound like brushing your teeth in a rainstorm.
We're not listening to those today. The librarians are taking no chances with the Mapleson cylinders. They don't want to accidentally erase any of the country's cultural history. Instead, we have this mystery cylinder from the family in Maine. It's not in great shape. Berg cleans it first with an air puffer shaped like a kid's rocket and a brush, but one made of camel hair, a little harsher than the brushes he prefers from a special shop in England.
They're made from Siberian squirrel.
Berg fiddles with the machine. The cylinder is turning unevenly. He rips up small pieces of black paper to use as a shim.
So if the cylinder is out of round, you'll get the wow, that kind of woo, 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 woo sound.
Wood is anxious. She says she's been staring at these cylinders
for like 7 years, just wondering what's on them, and now to finally see, like...
The room is silent, waiting.
Okay.
Then the recording starts. Berg laughs in surprise. Wood slides to the floor, her head in her hands.
Are you so disappointed?
I thought I was picking something that was unique, and I picked, like, the most everyday thing possible.
It's not a birthday party. It's a commercial recording of the song Hello My Baby, written in 1899 by Joseph E. Howard and Ida Emerson. You've probably heard it before. But there's still hope. The library has a lot of other unidentified cylinders. Wood says she just hopes they're not all Hello My Baby.
I mean, what if they are? What if you have like 2,500 Hello My Babies?
Then the whichever curator acquired that collection is going to be in big trouble.
Berg turns back to his work. He needs to calibrate the machine before the librarians can digitize the collection. Once they're done, you'll be able to hear these very earliest recordings from your own computer. Until that technology becomes obsolete, too. Jennifer Venasco, NPR News, New York.